The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, March the 22nd, 2021. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Well, welcome to another edition of the program, and I hate to be somewhat of I told you so, because nobody likes those kind of people, but did I not say just 2 short weeks ago that Carlos Carrasco was no short thing, and Marcus Stroman needs to be great, and, you know, that whole fifth starter competition, we need to see these guys, because all three of those guys are going to be important at some point in this season, as you always need. Always was told many, many years ago, you need 10 starters to get through the season. 6, 7, and 8 are playing out right in front of us. It's still to be determined how deep the Mets are and how can they go into 9 and 10. We know Syndergaard is one, but here we are. And the first thunderbolt of the 2021 season, and those are what we call them here, thunderbolts, the old winner within, Pat Riley. The first thunderbolt for this team has occurred as Carlos Carrasco tears his hamstring. There's some optimism that he'll be back by Memorial Day, if not sooner. But let's face it, you're going to be looking at 5, 6, you know, turns around the rotation, maybe more. And the thing about this kind of injury is that you don't want to rush it, because the last thing you want is him to re-injure it again. Or worse, he compromises himself and then he tries to change his delivery, hurts his shoulder, hurts his elbow, and away you go. So hate to be the I told you so, but here we are very quickly after that program. And we're faced with, you know, where do the Mets go next with that rotation? Joining us in just a little bit to help us through that and some of the other things going on, he just came back to New York. He's been down in Port St. Lucie. We're going to be doing somewhat of a grapefruit roundup, as Justin Toscano will tell us what the theme is over there in Port St. Lucie. How are things down at the complex? What's the feeling around the team? Justin Toscano is our buddy from the record, Mets beat reporter. He always is kind enough to give us time. So I figured I'd bring him in, as I said, and we start to really see, once you hit St. Paddy's Day, you really see the light at the end of the tunnel in spring training. Spring training is long, even though I feel like the days fly by, especially after the clock changes. But spring training has that longness to it where you start to get into that rut. It happened a little earlier this year because I think there was so few positional battles, but you know, now that we've gotten over that St. Paddy's Day hump, before you know it, it'll be opening day, and then we'll get into the grind of the season, and then the daily day-in and day-out competition begins. So he'll join us on that. But, you know, where are we at as we talk about Carrasco? And what I found interesting this week is that the way that I saw this all playing out, the starting situation, and when I built it out, when I started really looking at the rosters 2 weeks ago, I built it out in a way where one of those guys who lost the competition was, or both of them potentially, was going down to AAA. They were going to go down to Syracuse. They were going to stretch themselves out and be ready for the event, like, that we see what happens, which is starter going down, doubleheader, whatever. That's not going to be the case. Now you're hearing that Peterson is solidly in as the fourth starter. So I guess, and I said this again, Mets are looking at this differently than you and I. We're not seeing a lot of games this spring. There's not a lot of televised games, good, bad, or indifferent. They're seeing simulated action. They have technology and ways of looking at the stuff that indicates from the process that these guys go out there and employ who would be the best measure of success. You're hoping. You're hoping with all the new things that are out there that the Mets now have money to afford, that they're putting these things in place. Zach Scott coming from another organization, a very successful organization, using some of those same methods to help determine, hey, you know, what do we have here? It can't just be MLB.com and stats in spring training where both hitters and pitchers are working on things. You know, just because you get a scoreless inning, that's not the same intensity, that's not the same scoreless inning that you're going to have to get in just 2 short weeks. So with Peterson as the number four, it really looks like it's down to Lucchesi, who has the experience, versus Yamamoto, who has had a strong spring and has some cachet as a former top 10 prospect. But here's another thing, and this is the part that I really don't like when I really, you know, go into building a rotation. You're hearing about some of this opener piggybacking and some of the stuff that the Mets really have never done. And they had to do it to a certain degree. I know Chasen Shreve was kind of that multi-inning guy that came in last year. They almost had to go into piggybacking unintentionally because they didn't have enough pitching last year. And a guy like Shreve would have to come in for a Corey Oswalt, mainly because they couldn't get through the order maybe more than once. And will they do that now? And who would be the best candidate? What I worry a little bit about that scenario is that as you start to go to these 2 or 3 inning starts, whether it's Yamamoto starting and then Lucchesi coming in, you're really not building either one of those guys up for normal rotation work. And I think that's important. I think you have guys here that you brought in that have some ability to be a very solid back end of the rotation starter. That's not what you're looking to replace here with Carrasco. You're losing your number three. You're losing a guy who might be your number two. So I think it's important. I'll stand by the loser of that competition, which right now looks like it's going to come down to those two guys, short of something drastically different happening. David Peterson solidly in the number four. It's going to be Lucchesi or Yamamoto. At this point, Lucchesi, because of his experience, because he's done it, I have to think he's the guy. And I think Yamamoto is ticketed for AAA. But we'll see. And then at that point, you have Montgomery that probably makes the club now. You keep hearing all these great things about Jacob Barnes. He has no options. I have to think he makes the club. So really what it comes down to is you have your... This is your opening day situation. You have your DeGrom, Stroman, Walker, Peterson, Lucchesi in the rotation. Diaz, May, Castro, Loop, Familia, Betances. We'll get to those guys in a minute. And then out of the remaining, and I'm assuming they're only going to go 13 pitchers. And it's ridiculous to go more and then have... I mean, who would you send down? Almora? You know, you have VR, Guillerme, Nito... Kevin Pillar. I got that little Spanish thing going. And I don't think you really have any opportunity to send anybody down. So really it comes down to Lucchesi versus Yamamoto. I know there's some thought that both will make it and then we'll have some kind of piggybacking scenario. I don't see that unless all this talk about Jacob Barnes, who does not have an option from what I see, is all hot air. So there's where you are with that. This even, and I always talk about this being important for Stroman, because now you really need Stroman to be great. And that's even more so now. Until Memorial Day, maybe later, the Mets are going to rely on a tandem of DeGrom and Stroman. I know you have Taijuan Walker. I know he's looked pretty good this spring, but Taijuan Walker has not pitched a lot in the last couple of years. So you're relying on a rotation that out of the 3 of the 5 spots, you have a guy, Peterson, that was pretty good last year, but could be spotty and has to dance in and out of trouble. A guy in Walker who's pitched very little in the last 2 or 3 years. A couple of young arms, Lucchesi and Yamamoto, that have some potential, but their upside is maybe mid-rotation upside, probably more guys that are going to profile throughout their careers as 4 and 5. Yamamoto might have a little bit more potential, depending on how you look at it. Some feel, I've read that he could be, even both he and Lucchesi could be 2.5 war guys. Those are kind of mid-rotation guys, maybe guys that start to creep up. And then you look over in Toronto, and Steven Matz is having a great spring. And then you say to yourself, yeah, they got all that depth, all those assets, but wouldn't it be nice to have Steven Matz in this rotation, who you know what you can get, even though he's been bad at times. He was really turning the corner under this, not with this pitching coach, but he was turning the corner back in 2019, and you're hoping that could continue, and that's not going to happen. So you really are relying on the Mets being right here. You're being when they signed Stroman and they didn't go out in the market, they were really relying on him to be the number two type guy, because at that point you didn't have Carrasco. When they went out and got depth, these are the guys they selected. They traded for Lucchesi. They were able to grab Yamamoto, who was designated for assignment from Miami. And now David Peterson, who was so important last year, was thrown into this. But now is even more. You're not asking for the same level of performance, because last year he was really your number two. You're asking him to really go in, grab that four spot, and not just give you 4 or 5 innings, but you want a guy who could go 6 innings, 3 runs, maybe a little bit better, maybe get you into the 7th. Because who knows what you're going to get any kind of way with that number 5. Now, I think Lucchesi is a little underrated, and I think Lucchesi is going to do better than people think, because he's already done that. But it'll be really interesting, because this could spiral really quick. You could be in a situation 2.5 weeks into the season where there'll be tons of frustration, where the Mets are they have DeGrom, so let's say Stroman's okay, but then the other 3 times through the rotation, it's a dicey scenario, and you have offense has to carry them a lot, an overworked bullpen. You hope that that's not the case, but this really can turn into that quick. And that's what gets it to me into my second point here, is everybody's complaining about Familia and Betances, and let me tell you, both of them are very spotty guys. You have your, until Lugo comes back, you have your Diaz, May, Castro, 7-8-9. Castro might be the biggest surprise of the spring. A guy they acquired late last year. Wasn't terrible, but again, fits the profile of what I complain about. Throws hard, walks a lot of guys, kind of a sweaty guy to bring in a big spot. Don't know what you're going to get. Could be lights out one batter and then loses it, or lights out one outing and then loses it right after. And what it really comes down to is when you start getting into these early relief outings, Familia and Betances are going to be important, are going to be hugely important. Familia, you keep hearing he has the stuff, but he has no command, he has no control. You've heard that time and time and time again. I don't think that's going to change. The one thing about Familia coming back is you didn't expect him to be a dominant closer. But at this point, it's amazing how from when he was traded, when he was having a really good 2018, was traded to Oakland, had some success in Oakland, since he's come back, he's had no ability to navigate consistently any of his command of his pitches. You have outings where he just can't throw strikes. He can throw hard, it moves. He's nowhere near the same pitcher he was. I keep comparing him to Jose Mesa. How Jose Mesa was this great closer, had some tough spots in the big postseason situation. Was always a guy that got a job later in his career, but never was the same. Was a bit of the kerosene on the fire. Betances, who I was so excited about when Brody Van Wagenen, he had that great Christmas Eve Christmas present, doesn't look like a big league pitcher. And, a guy that has, again, no command, walks a lot of guys, but even worse, at least Familia might be able to navigate through those things with velocity. You're talking about a guy throwing 89, 90, 91. I know he may be getting up into the mid-90s, but just because you touched 94 on a radar gun, you got to do it consistently. And let's face it, Betances with no velocity is a much different pitcher. You could lay back a little bit more with a guy like that. You don't have to worry about him blowing you away. The movement that velocity sometimes creates, all that goes away. So you're now going to rely on these 2 guys. And I know I saw some chatter on Twitter, people saying, well, why don't the Mets show that money doesn't matter and release these guys? I don't see that as even remotely something I would do right now. Unless you really feel And you have to be honest. The talent evaluators on this team have to be honest. If Baton says, like the media says, and like myself, and again, we're not watching enough of this because we're going through box scores, through reports. It's a very tough situation when you really don't have the kind of, you know, we're not scouts by trade either, any of us here, unless there's a few scouts in the audience. But you're not watching them. You're just looking at results. So we don't see the process. We don't see what goes in. So unless there's someone on that staff that says this is no longer a big league pitcher, Baton says is no longer a guy that could get big league hitters out, then you release him. You got to give him a try. Their names are going to necessitate them going in the season and giving it a try. And that's where early on, and I always say this with a baseball season, you have that kind of like period where you're trying to figure it out. Yeah, you have spring training, but you sometimes in April start to see how things evolve. And that's where teams get off to rough starts, or how a team begins is not how they end. And sometimes, you know, some of the biggest lies about a team happen in April and in September. Because in April, you get off to either a bad or good start because you're trying to figure stuff out, trying to figure out roles, trying to figure out where things go. Or in September, when everybody's out of it, you'll see guys come up and play well. And then, you know, they're somewhat of a mirage. So I think Familia and Betances get a chance to really prove themselves. I think you can see, I would not be surprised if one or both gets released sometime this season. Let me tell you that. I'll throw you that hot take. I wouldn't be surprised if one or both, if they struggle, gets released at some times at this season, especially if somebody down in the farm starts to evolve as a good arm. The Drew Smith situation, now his shoulder's hurting. He's a guy that's had a lot of potential, a guy they got from Tampa. You know, that's never a good sign when you have a shoulder injury. Shoulders are... Guy just came back from Tommy John. Now he's got a shoulder issue. So, you know, that's something to look out for. So there you go with that. So you have a couple of things that early in the season are really going to be worth looking at. These are not just spring training issues. How the rotation is going to navigate till Memorial Day or thereabouts with three guys that have pitched, either have very little experience or have pitched very little in the last couple of years. Two guys in the bullpen, big names, former stars, that have struggled the last couple of years. How are they going to help out? And, you know, are they on the clock very quickly? Could you see a situation where first 2 weeks into the season, back end of the rotation struggles, maybe the offense carries the load in some of those games, sixth inning comes, trying to get this to Castro, May, Diaz. No Lugo yet, because Lugo's out probably till May. And Betances or Familia has a bad sixth inning. And then the real talk is going to be, well, they don't have enough pitching, bullpen's not deep enough, and away you go. I can see that. I have my vision in front of me. And, we'll see how they navigate that. I think Luis Rojas, who has a bit to prove how he's going to put those guys, Betances and Familia, into positions of success. Again, I don't see the process. But me, neither one of those guys is ready for high-leverage situations. I think you got to see when that sixth inning comes around or when that spot comes around, are they way behind? Are they way ahead? What part of the lineup? I mean, you want to put Betances or Familia into the heat of, you know, Freddie Freeman, Marcelo Ozuna? You want to give him that part of the lineup? It's not fair. It's not fair. You've got to, that's what your high leverage relievers are. So it's not just about inning. It's not just about how they can get to 7-8-9. It's what part of the order are these guys going to be asked to go after. And right now, I don't see them as high leverage in terms of the high leverage spot, in terms of game score, or high leverage in terms of elite hitters in the middle of the lineup. I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, because if those guys, one or both of those guys, I'm not asking for them to be who they were. But if they're anywhere close to good, it really lengthens this bullpen. A bullpen that will be, if Castro, May, and Diaz pitch like they've been pitching in the spring and like we hope they can pitch, especially Castro, he might be one of the biggest surprises. And yeah, you got Lupin to be the situational lefty. Okay. And then you add Lugo to that and you have some kind of contribution in earlier innings from a Familia Betances, you got a really good bullpen. And you could always add to that. So that'll be interesting. So those are the two things I think that we'll see throughout the rest of the spring into early regular season, things to watch and things that will be early storylines. Because I think the offense will be fine, short of a major injuries or, you know, Pete Alonso being a mirage or one of the big hitters, Dom Smith, McNeil, getting off to an awful start or showing some signs of some kind of regression. I think the offense will be fine. I've been saying that the offense was fine last year. It's these pitching scenarios that have been that underlying, if you want to say, concern that we're hoping against. And really, when you talk about thunderbolt here with Carrasco, your first real thunderbolt was when you lost out on Trevor Bauer. Because if you have Trevor Bauer in this rotation now, not as big of a deal when Carrasco goes down. Still a big deal. But you went from Bauer, elite, potentially a Cy Young candidate, down to Taijuan Walker. Potential pretty good to be a mid-rotation guy, but he's never going to be a top-of-the-rotation guy. And I know everybody was happy because of the mean tweets and all that stuff, but guess what? You take a few mean tweets for a better, more secure starting rotation right now. I just don't, and I keep saying this, I don't dislike Carlos Carrasco, and this is nowhere near as serious, of course, as his cancer scare from a couple of years ago. But he's a guy that is a risk. And, you know, you're putting a lot on Stroman, and you're putting a lot on guys that still have a lot to prove from the 6, 7, 8. And we haven't even got into, you really don't know who 9 and 10 are in terms of starting rotation depth. You're hoping on Syndergaard, and we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Now, finally, before we wrap up here and get to Justin Toscano, there is some simmering of news about contract extensions for Lindor and Conforto. And I'm going to give you my thoughts. You guys know how I feel. I have no problem with them signing either one of these guys to extensions. I really don't. Because I think Conforto is a solid offensive player. He's a good guy. He's been here. He knows this market. I told you, you know, short of that MVP season by Bryce Harper, he's every bit the offensive player, comparably to Bryce Harper. And I think there's some nostalgia there from this front office, especially with Sandy Alderson specifically, because he drafted him. So I think that that plays into having that guy that's been here, that knows this market, that's had success here. Now, Lindor is another situation. Yeah, you're going to have tons of competition, and now all of a sudden the media is scaring us about, well, the Yankees really like him, and the Mets could get into a Mets-Yankees bidding war come the offseason. Lindor, I still feel like, for both parties, unless they get exactly what they want, I don't see Lindor signing for any less than what he thinks he could get. I don't see the Mets just writing a check and being irresponsible to sign him at any cost. That's why hearing reports from John Heyman that the Mets are motivated to get over $300 million, is that all this is about? The number three at the total value of the contract? Is that really what it's all about? I have a hard time believing that. I give you 10 years or 11 years or 12 years, but I make it $300 million and your AAV falls below a certain level. Is that all it's really about? Is it about the years? Is it about the AAV? We don't know. We really don't know what he wants. And you know what's out there with Fernando Tatis, different situation, buying at arbitration years much younger. But to me, what I'm curious to see, the Mets are about potentially spending $500 million and committing to a offensive foundation of Lindor and Conforto. And I think Conforto, in a lot of ways, you kind of know, signing him now is in the Mets' benefit, because once you get to free agency with Boris, if he has a big year, we're talking, I don't think Conforto is the small sample you saw in the pandemic shortened season. He was very good. I think that if you spread that out over a full normal season, you're looking at a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs, driving 100 runs, hit about 260, 125, 130 OPS plus, really good. Not the guy that could be maybe inching towards an MVP conversation. Now, that's more what you saw in the small sample size. I'm not sure that's Conforto. He's a very solid player. So signing him now versus getting it into free agency where somebody may say, they may value him a little bit more, and then all of a sudden it gets into a crazy bidding war, and now you have to overpay. It's almost in the Mets' best interest right now. Lindor, there is shortstop inventory. We still have to see what he's all about. Looks good, you know, grand slam, hitting home runs, great personality, plays an elite, you know, he could clearly play defense. Again, didn't see a ton of games this spring because they're not televised, but what you see, you know the guy could play the position. But do you want to go out and marry him this quickly on an overpay? Mets already went below $300 million, so they're negotiating, and that's what Sandy Alderson's all about. He's a pretty good negotiator. He's a hardliner. And, is Lindor, who could go out there, have this big season, and then maybe stand out so much from all these other shortstops, Sager and Baez and whatever, whoever else, you know, Trevor Story, who I think is probably better than Lindor, but, you know, we'll see. But Anyway, will he be motivated to sign this before opening day? It's going to be really interesting. And then once those guys are signed, that's your offensive foundation. And everybody else is going to bounce off. You're not going to do another $300 million contract. So if Pete Alonso becomes this huge star, be interesting how they handle that. Jeff McNeil could become a really good hitter. And all of a sudden, you know, in a couple of years, the conversation could be big contract for him. Brandon Nimmo, offensive guy that you know, may start to get some really, if he has a big offensive year, as he starts to head towards his free agency years, you know, what do they pay him? So you have to make sure you get this right, because if you overpay for either one of these guys, Steve Cohen's wallet's not endless, and there has to be flexibility on this roster. You got to make sure you're right. Are the Mets right? Well, seems like they're ready to say they are. They've based this off of a short interaction, spring training action, and, you know, with Conforto, maybe you could get him now and it could be more of a value in terms of where you want him to be versus free agency. I get that. Lindor is interesting because if you have to overpay now, there has to be some, you know, again, if I'm looking at this objectively, if I'm the Mets, I got to get something to sign you before opening day. If I'm Lindor, do I even want to give that? Do I need that? Do I want to sign now? Because he's got to learn about the city. He's got to learn about the team. It's really interesting that this could get done before opening day, because I'm not sure it's in either side's interest to get it done. When you look at it from a business standpoint, the Mets don't know really what they're truly getting, and why would Lindor want to pass up the opportunity? More for Lindor, pass up the opportunity to go out there and see what he's worth. So anyway, let's take a quick break. Let's step back. When we come back, Justin Toscano of The Record is going to join us. He was down in Port St. Lucie. He's taking a little breather before opening day. Came back to New York. I want to get his thoughts, see how things are down there. We'll see what he thinks about this team and some of the topics we brought up here in the open. So sit back, relax, and when we come back, Justin Toscano of The Record, right after this. Hey, Mets fans. So, got some feedback that you guys didn't all like the Manscaped commercials. Some people actually bought some stuff, and they gave me some great feedback, but I try to take feedback seriously from you, the fans. So guess what? We have a commitment, and we live up to our commitments here at the Talking Mets podcast, but I want to make this ad more inclusive for all of us. So our sponsors at Manscaped are the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming. So that's it. You go to manscaped.com, it'll tell you more about it. Check out the Perfect Package 3.0. That's where we're at right now at the Talking Mets podcast. We're encouraging you to get the Perfect Package 3.0. You use the code Talking Mets, no G, at checkout and get 20% off and free shipping. Listen, shipping costs are really expensive right now. You must all see that with something you're buying. And why not get free shipping? Why not get the discount? If you're into below-the-waist grooming, great. If you're not, skip through this. Don't worry about it. So no play on words. No funny Pete Alonso, Marcus Stroman, Jacob deGrom play on words. I just want you to go, if you choose, to manscaped.com, check out the Perfect Package 3.0, read about all their great products, and then at checkout after you buy stuff, because I think you'll like it. And use the code TALKINGMETS, all one word, no G, to get 20% off and free shipping. So that's our sponsor for spring training. I hope you enjoy going to manscaped.com if you choose. Use the code, get the free shipping, great grooming tools, first-in-class MVP-level grooming tools over at manscaped.com. Now, back to Talking Mets baseball. We're back, and joining me, Justin Toscano. You guys know him, Mets beat reporter for The Record, at Justin C. Toscano on Twitter. And Justin, welcome to the program. So St. Paddy's Day is like that demarcation line. The long spring is coming to an end. You could see opening day right ahead. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, now that, you know, we're almost at opening day, you know, do you have like an overall theme for the spring? You know, it's been an odd spring, Zoom all spring for you guys, not the same access. What's been the overall theme this spring training? A lot different than, I guess, definitely last year when it got shut down, but a lot different, I'm sure, than any other kind of reporting you've done in your short career here covering the Mets.
Right. I think the theme would probably be a taste of normalcy is, I think, the best way I would put it, is because you've got the it was nice to see real baseball. Like, now I'm in New York City, but back in Port St. Lucie, you know, you got like some of the backfield access. You couldn't go in the dugouts or on the fields, but it's like normal years. But you know, we got to see live baseball and drills and PFPs, you know, as much as, God, I never thought I would miss, you know, PFPs and things like that. But we got to see a lot of that stuff. So you're, you know, we were around it. So it was like a little bit of taste of normalcy. But like you said, just as it's all over Zoom still. They had us on the concourse at Clover Park because they weren't allowed to put us in the press box there, the media room, just with the regulations. So a little bit of weirdness still to it. But I think the theme around the team, you know, remains like optimism. And I think, you know, everybody there is going about their business as usual. And there is a lot of, you know, there were a lot of encouraging signs of spring. Certainly the Steve Cohen era isn't, you know, as rosy as a lot of people would make it seem. There's still, you know, things this baseball team has to sort out. But I think there is a lot of optimism, you know, with the players themselves, and speaking just not for them, but maybe, you know, how they have seemed to feel about this, just because I think there is a lot of optimism and almost a relaxed vibe, because they know, you know, while the expectations are there, they know this ball club can do something special if things click. Things actually clicking is, as you know, is a completely different, you know, topic.
And I think you make a great point, because, yeah, and things aren't as rosy as maybe everybody's making it out to be. Look, Steve Cohen coming on November 1st, it's not a magic wand. But I think the fact that there's this new hope and maybe the idea that even when things go bad, like what we'll get into, Carlos Carrasco injury, you know, right, there's an opportunity at some point this season to go out, augment the roster. There's extension talks still going on with Lindor and Conforto. These are things in the past that could not happen. Everything had to be in this very narrow window of opportunity. So I'm thinking that even with all the bad, you know, maybe the optimism is overblown to a certain degree, but it's the nature of the surrounding, I guess, differences. Are there major differences with the new ownership that you see overtly, other than the attitude and people just talking, you know, positively about it?
Yeah, I do. I think back in the first week when we talked to Zach Scott, first week of spring training, when he was asked about, you know, the Lindor and Conforto extensions, and if it's possible to do both of those at the same time, because both players seem to have a deadline for getting those done in spring training. And Zach Scott was talking about how it is feasible, because he did it in Boston, extending two guys at the same time. And he, you know, he said it is possible. It is something, you know, anytime they have a player there that they like, that they want long-term, they can do that, and they can do two at the same time. The difference in this ownership group, though, is that you could see it feasibly happening, them extending both, whereas, you know, the previous ownership probably, you know, doesn't go out and get Lindor in this type of deal, because they're probably not going to be able to pay him what he's going to demand. So there's a lot of optimism there. The other thing I see that might be a little more behind the scenes is the dedication to the infrastructure, I think, is big. The Mets beefing up the R&D department, analytics, you know, for those at home, those fans who may not know, you know, as much about R&D, but that's basically is kind of like the plumbing of an organization. And then the player development side, they've totally overhauled with a lot of new hires, and just the vision for that. I think there's better infrastructure now, you know, than there was. And those, you know, those new people don't have a direct contextual comparison between the last ownership group and this one, that, you know, a lot of them just came on, but those are tangible differences. I think the optimism is very warranted, you know, among fans. Like, are they going to sign everybody? No, we saw that this winter, that there is still going to be misses, but by and large, I think the potential that this ownership group does have, and you know, even going down to Sandy Alderson and Zach Scott, you know, and Sandy and Zach to do their jobs and to really improve this roster with noticeable strides and bolstering a lot of areas is a very realistic thing. I don't think you're going to have to pick between, you know, the Rick Porcellos and the Michael Walkas versus someone else. Now, I think they're going to be, I think it's realistic to think they could improve this roster in multiple facets and in a lot of off seasons and go after aggressively, go after the improvements that they think they need. Whereas I know a lot of fans, you know, felt that was a pipe dream under Wilpon ownership. So I do think it's very real in a lot of these key areas.
Who knows by the time this hits the airwaves, if extensions have been signed. There are some reports today that they're getting closer with Lindor. Mets willing to go over the $300 million mark. Michael Conforto talked in the post game about potentially an extension with them. The thing about this is it's interesting because these, in a way, Lindor is a bigger risk than Conforto. You know what you're getting with Conforto. He's got a history here in New York. Lindor, better player. We have a history there. He's had a, I wouldn't say down years, but he hasn't been himself for maybe a year, year and a half. The pandemic season a bit of a washout. So I'm wondering if the Mets get a deal with some kind of discount. What I mean by that is, do they get a deal, even though it's $300 million, closer to where they want to be versus Lindor, who obviously could go out in that market, maybe go to the Yankees, maybe drag another team. I know there's a ton of shortstops on the market. So I guess a two-part question. One, do you think this is going to get done with these guys? And two, would you be surprised if they weren't more team-friendly or middle-of-the-road deals to get these done? Not overpays, I guess, is where I think they go if these players sign before the season starts.
Right. I think Lindor, that one's tough to read because it's just like he would have – I could see something getting done, but the issue I face there when I think about it is he would have, even with a heavy shortstop market, it would be this upcoming winter. He's still going to have so much leverage. I think with his track record and things he's done in the league and the way he's viewed, not only as a baseball player, but as a person, as a brand, which matters in the sport, you know, for your clubhouse and the city and the fan base, things like that. I think he's got so much leverage that he could command kind of whatever they want. So if he did sign, I don't know that it would be team friendly in the sense that, like, I think it would be fair, not an overpay, but I don't think it would be too team friendly that it would raise our eyebrows, just because I think this is a guy on the Mets side, you know, he's got some leverage because look, the Mets traded two major league shortstops for him. And then a couple prospects who, you know, weren't throw-ins. I mean, those are pretty good prospects. And so I think the onus is on, you know, the Mets, and Lindor's side might have leverage with that because the Mets almost need to extend him or this trade doesn't look so good, even though you have, you know, that extra year control with Carrasco. But I think it's, it looks kind of weird if the Mets don't extend him. And then you go back looking at that trade now. Of course, you could go back to the heavy shortstop market. There's fallback options, you know, next winter. They could be in on one of those guys. And if anything doesn't work out. But I do think eventually something will get done with him. Maybe if it's not this spring, then, you know, re-signing him, you know, in the winter. I just think that he's so important of a player in their eyes to them with what they did give up in the trade and how they acquired him that I think they're going to push to keep him there and do really whatever it takes. Conforto, that one's a wild card. Like you said, I mean, he's, you know what you're getting with him. And I think they've got a great idea of him already, but it's, it would be fair of him to wonder what he would be getting on the open market, what his market would look like, especially with, you know, being one of the top outfielders in the market next year, maybe the top outfielder in the market next year, if I'm thinking correctly off the top of my head here. But that one, I would think Lindor is more likely to get done in spring training than Conforto, but I could see Lindor easily going to free agency and playing his market because I do think he's got that leverage and the track record to be able to demand kind of what he wants, especially after Tatis got how much, you know, he did even before. And I know the years were higher on that one and they're buying out arbitration years. So it's a little bit of a different situation, but it's weird because at the beginning of spring training or even a couple weeks, you know, when they acquired Lindor, I thought it would be, you know, they'd for sure sign him to an extension. Now we've got, you know, essentially 10 days because he said he will not negotiate into the season. So they're getting pretty close around that deadline. It's a tad surprising. It's kind of taken this long to materialize a lot of these discussions.
Carlos Carrasco injures his hamstring. There was already some concern that he wasn't going to be ready for the season. Even before that, and I hate to be prophetic, I said about 2 weeks ago, Marcus Stroman is so important to this rotation. He needs to be elite. He opting out actually was a big reason why I think the mojo of that team got thrown off last year. They still would have had issues, but, it really made that rotation thin. Now he's even more important. Not just because, you know, the Mets have depth. Yeah. We know they have Yamamoto, they have Lucchesi, Peterson. Those aren't bad options. But the top end, can any of those guys be what Carrasco can be? The answer is probably not. So I think now, even more so than ever, Stroman being a very solid number two is so important because you just don't know when Carrasco's coming back, and you have to be careful. You can't rush him. You don't know what Syndergaard's going to give you. Everybody's penciling them in for who they are, and I believe they will be. But let's face it. Let's say around Memorial Day, you don't want to rush these guys. You don't want them to make rash decisions that could cause other injuries. So I think Stroman pitching well off the bat early is so important.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I mean, he's a guy that I even could have seen, even if Carrasco were healthy, entered camp on time, everything, I could have seen them putting Marcus Stroman in the number two slot right behind DeGrom. I think he is so important to that rotation because you looked at it last year, David Peterson was the second most reliable starter on that team behind Jacob DeGrom. And now this year, like, yes, there's both things can be true. So thing number one is that there's good depth on this team, you know, Yamamoto, Lucchesi, David Peterson. Thing two is that those guys aren't guys that should be in the top half of, you know, the top two, three of a contending team's rotation. And I think in a tough division like this, you know, you might start kind of squirming a little bit if Marcus Stroman doesn't get off to a hot start. You don't have Carrasco, and then you're looking at that same issue with you've got Jacob DeGrom and then everybody behind him. So Jacob DeGrom's that constant and everybody behind him in a pretty tough division. Like the Braves look good, had a good offseason. The Nationals did too. The Phillies look like they were going to have a disastrous offseason and actually somewhat, in my opinion, pieced it together better than sure. I thought they would. But Marcus Stroman pitching well, not only pitching well, but out of the gate, right out of the jump from the first turn of the rotation on is very important because now he is a good number two guy. But they need that top half of the rotation to hold serve just because you don't know when, you know, Carrasco is going to come back. And it's going to be, you just have to hope that David Peterson is what, you know, he was to some extent last year and maybe takes a step up from that. You have to hope that Joey Lucchesi is, you know, what he was and you know, in San Diego for that first year, he showed some upside there before they had him, you know, in the bullpen, the alternate site last year. Jordan Yamamoto is a guy with some major league experience, but I think the quality of this depth is a little bit overblown in the sense that, like, I think it is quality depth, but we're going to have to wait and see on a lot of these guys because we just don't know. Like, they don't have the track records of the Jacob DeGroms or the Carlos Carrascos or even the Marcus Stromans. I mean, you're going to have to wait and see a little bit, which for me, it makes it even more important for Marcus Stroman to pitch well. I totally agree with you there. It's because we saw it last year, like a lot of question marks behind Jacob DeGrom. You don't want that this year. You can't afford that in a 162-game season. This team specifically, I think, needs to get off to a very good start.
Justin Toscano joining me at Justin C. Toscano on Twitter, Mets beat reporter for the record. Before the Carrasco injury, I had said that I believe two out of those three names that you mentioned, Lucchesi, Peterson, Yamamoto, would make it, and then potentially one would go down. And, you know, initially I thought Peterson might be in a little bit of trouble. I mean, Yamamoto's looked good this spring. Lucchesi is the only one that's had a 30-start sample in the big league, so you know he's got that veteran. Out of those three, he's a veteran. And Yamamoto, I mean, the more I read about him, it's peculiar that Miami let him go because he was a decent prospect. He was a top 10 prospect for Milwaukee. He was in the Yelich trade. He was a top 10 prospect for the Marlins. Obviously, had a bad year last year, and now with Carrasco out, I wonder if all three will make it. Because I thought the guy that doesn't make it, let him go to Syracuse, let him stretch out, let him make his start every fifth day, because you're going to need him sooner rather than later. But now you're wondering, with Peterson pretty much locking himself in, which was a little bit of a surprise to me that Rojas said, well, he's the fourth starter. Now you've got Yamamoto, Lucchesi. Now it's more like, okay, which one of those guys can be a swing man out of the bullpen? And I guess that might be more Lucchesi than Yamamoto, but it's interesting because it looks like what I thought was going to be the right way to go is completely the opposite direction the Mets are taking now.
Yeah. And I've seen it, you know, I remember seeing a couple of your tweets about that. I think they're both good options with which way to go, but I thought personally, and whether this is right, I don't know, but like I thought David Peterson had a leg up all along because of that prior experience in 2020. Sure. So you're thinking, like, from a human perspective and coaches about, you know, an organization evaluating these guys, you're going to look at, and Luis Rojas said it yesterday, exactly what I thought all along, is like the stuff as we've seen it is what it was in 2020. And that stuff in 2020 played at the big league level. So essentially what he's saying is, why would it not play this year? You know, why would he not? So it was almost to me like David Peterson was going to have to pitch his way out of a rotation spot. Like, obviously they told him he was going to need to compete, but I thought that he, you know, if he had a good spring, decent spring, he was in it. But yeah, you know, you could go the other way and just be, you know, he didn't have a start in AAA, only had, you know, a handful in AA. So if he had more seasoning, that, you know, might help him out. But now, you know, I think he's a guy that belongs in the rotation. Now, Yamamoto, Lucchese, you look at, I think personally, I was very wrong a few weeks back when I thought that Sam McWilliams was going to be their last spot in the bullpen. I thought they liked the stuff. I thought I was like, okay, that fastball, you know, mid-90s to high 90s, maybe creeps up that velocity and the rise can maybe play. But, you know, he gets option. Now you're looking at guys who could be swingmen. Like, well, they have a long man in the pen, a guy like that. And I think, you know, I think the guy who loses out on that fifth starter spot could realistically be in the bullpen. Now, they do have an off day right off the bat and then another one right in the middle of their home opener. But it's going to be interesting to see how they structure it because I think it's a toss-up. Lucchese's got more experience. Yamamoto's got some upside, though, and has pitched very well during spring. And the thing with Yamamoto is I guess you could probably say this about Lucchese, but I think Yamamoto's gotten a lot more crisp as the spring has gone on and his stuff has looked a lot better. So let's just say I wouldn't want to be the one making the decision there.
And the thing that's interesting is that as you go into the bullpen, you know, now Drew Smith is out, he's injured. Right. Gazelman, you know, to me, Gazelman's been one of the biggest disappointments the last 5 years, a guy that was huge in 2016 in the rotation, thought he'd be a guy that could at least be a good back end of the rotation starter. Hasn't been good there, hasn't been good out of the bullpen. And it, what exacerbates it a little bit is that there's a lot of agita amongst fans anyway about Betances and Familia. And with right. Castro pitching well, I think that's going to be maybe a little less. You hope Lugo comes back. You have Loop, May, Diaz looks good. But Betances and Familia are going to need to get big outs at some point, either early in the game as the sixth inning guy or, you know, can't pitch the same guys every day. They're going to need to get outs. Betances has not looked like a big league pitcher at times, even though he got a clean inning today. Familia, what's interesting, and a lot of people have said, he throws hard. The stuff looks like it's there. He can't command anything or control, depending on how they look at it. Those guys are perplexing. They make a lot of money. I don't think they're just going to dump them. I think they're going to give them every opportunity to succeed. And I personally don't think it's because of money. I think it's because of the name, their name on the back of the jersey. What about those two guys? Because they are ones that are going to become they start blowing games, you're going to see a big topic of conversation amongst at least the fans. Like, hey, you know, these guys are a problem. Let's move on. But now with Drew Smith out and maybe some of the younger guys not being ready, this team has not developed much bullpen pitching. You may need them.
Yeah, I think it's the bullpen coming in I saw as like a high-risk, high-reward unit. I think if those guys – it's funny how it works out because they were the keys all along, right? Because you may be factored in, okay, you know, Edwin Diaz is going to have to stay in his top form like he was in 2020. But coming into camp – you like Betances and Familia were the X factors, the ones you looked at that you said, okay, if these guys are great, this bullpen's probably going to be great. If these guys aren't great, this unit might be in trouble. And I think it's shaped out that way in camp where you see like they've had ebbs and flows. Both of them, I mean, you know, Betances pitched a clean inning today, but you know, it's like always questions about his velocity. And, like, sometimes his stuff hasn't looked great. But you're right. I mean, it's partially because of the contracts and that they're veterans. Like, they're going to give them every opportunity. But, I mean, man, you're going to be living and dying with it. If those two aren't good, it's going to be tough on some nights, you know, on the road or getting neat outs in the sixth, seventh, eighth, you know, inning, even, you know, even into the ninth or things happen. And at this point, I mean, I hate to say it, you hope everybody stays healthy, but you know, they've got Lugo out already. What's to say there isn't another injury and things like that that stress bullpen depth? They're going to – Betances and Familia are going to need to be good and better than they've been. And I think it's really been surprising for fans. It's been surprising for me, too, that Betances just really hasn't been what he was since, you know, that 2018 season and, you know, in the Bronx. And I think Familia might be a little bit of a different case. He's got high expectations because of what he gets paid. But, I mean, did you – like – I don't really know many people who looked at that deal when Brody signed him and thought that it was like a tremendous deal. Or I think Betances is the more puzzling one to me, because that's a guy who, yeah, he had the injury filled 2019, but that's a guy who was coming off. He's four-time All-Star, I believe. He was coming off a great tenure in the Bronx, and he's hailed as, you know, a great signing, because that's what it looked to be. And he's just, he's been flat. He hasn't been himself at all. And I think, if those two don't pitch well, it's going to be tough, and you don't want to put extra stress on your better arms like Diaz and May and Castro. That said, maybe you can withstand a little bit of Betances and Familia kind of shaking a little bit there in the beginning, because Miguel Castro has pitched so well, because, you know, you've got Trevor May, who looks like he will be a good addition, because Edwin Diaz has been lights out, and you hope he continues that. And yeah, it's those two are high risk though for me. I mean, it's going to be tough because they haven't built any depth, you know, now with Drew Smith out due to injury. We don't know his timeline. Sam McWilliams being optioned. Gesellman, like you said, I mean, I think he might almost be on his last straw with them, because it's like he's had pretty much every opportunity to succeed. Now, the thing with him that you could say is that I know he's been thrown in different roles and kind of yanked from the rotation, brought back from the bullpen, things like that. But it's the bullpen overall is high risk, high reward. And I think the main keys to that are Betances and Familia.
I always like to ask those that cover the team during spring, what's your biggest surprise this spring? What's your biggest disappointment? Doesn't have to be something overt. It could be something, you know, minor league fields. You know, you're making your way around the complex. You went into spring with some things that you were looking for. Now we're in the back half. So what is, and maybe it's still developing a little bit, what's your biggest surprise? What's your biggest disappointment of this team so far?
Biggest surprise. Okay. Biggest surprise is Luis Guillorme. I think personally, like the eye test, I mean, I've only covered the team since 2019. So I wasn't here for most of his prospect, you know, time in the minors, but the eye test to me has always said he's good. But I had thought he was pretty underrated. And then, you know, it still feels like that. But this spring, he seems to be making every play. And I'm not just talking about the 22-pitch walk, but every play defensively, to the point where you start to wonder if this guy should be in the lineup when Marcus Stroman pitches and get a ground, you know, a guy like that for defensive purposes. He's made every play, to the point where if there's a DH, maybe JD Davis isn't starting at third, and maybe they tinker with that a little more. So he's been my biggest pleasant surprise, because I think a lot of people believe that 2020, yes, it was a small sample size, but maybe it was a little bit of a flash in the pan for Guillorme. But I think he's done nothing but carried that on. He's shown he can make every play on defense. I think his at-bats have been very good for a guy who isn't known for the batty swings. I think his at-bats have actually been very good and tough at-bats. Biggest disappointment to me, we've seen all the depth. Like I've been encouraged by what Pilar has shown, what Almora has shown something better than what I thought he would early, you know, in camp. And, biggest disappointment to me would have to be BR. That was a guy I thought, I mean, now he could come around. The Mets do think he's going to come around. They've been patient with him. He's a veteran guy who's, I think, is 29 years old, but that's a guy who I saw as you know, like Guillorme would have been a solid backup infielder, I thought, coming into camp. But, you know, now that you signed BR, he can play multiple positions. That's a very good guy to have if somebody is getting a day of rest or if somebody is injured. And that's a guy, VR, you thought could start on some of the bad teams in the league and still have a starting spot. And he's shown us really nothing in camp. And I think they knew they were going to have to play him more at third and get him more reps. It would take time, but he hasn't been too great there. He hasn't really shown anything since that home run early on, you know, at the plate. And I think that's been really disappointing to me so far, because except for that, I think they really bolster their depth. And heck, he could come around and just have a great year, but it's been disappointing that he really hasn't shown much in camp, considering he's a veteran guy with a lot of starting experience.
You mentioned, and before we wrap up, you mentioned Guillerme and J.D. Davis. I feel like everybody's waiting for J.D. Davis to fail in some ways, the fans, things like that. And I like J.D. J.D. had a great second half. I think you hit the nail on the head with Guillerme. Maybe there's opportunities to spot him against the right pitchers. But I feel like all winter, well, who's going to replace J.D. Davis? J.D. Davis was an elite hitter in the second half. And, you know, everybody loved the Justin Turner rumors. He's not that, from a defensive metric standpoint, he's not that much worse than Justin Turner. No. I'd be careful about giving away J.D. Davis. So before we wrap up, you know, are we overlooking as a fan base, maybe the media a little bit, overlooking J.D. Davis?
I think so. And I, you know, full disclosure, I think he's a great guy, like always a nice guy, always accountable for, you know, his mistakes, always there to when he, you know, doesn't play well, always been nice to everybody, at least from what I've seen in the club among the media circle. I think he is overlooked a little bit because I think you can go metrics, and I certainly use those too, but the metrics say he plays a worse third base than my eyes tell me, and maybe my eyes deceive me, but I think a big thing is, like, yes, his lateral quickness and athleticism needs to get a lot better. So he's got a little more of that range going, you know, left and right, and can make those plays a little more fluidly. And sometimes his arm, strong as it is, gets him into trouble a little bit. But I think he's more adequate than a lot of people like to think. Because, look, if you're talking about the Justin Turner rumors, I mean, J.D. Davis is a guy who former GM Jared Porter said, you know, is still in the developmental stage. This is a guy who could still take a jump defensively, could still figure something out like that. And he's, you know, he's got the potential to be a pretty elite bat, and he's always had that bat. But I think he is a little bit overlooked because, look, it's like we figure that, you know, third base is his natural position. You know, he didn't play a lot of left field, so he was getting the flack for left field, and he should be perfect at third base, right? But it's a guy who, he was behind Matt Chapman in college, so he didn't really play a lot of, you know, third base in college, and like, so he hasn't gotten a ton of those reps. And then when he gets up in Houston, he's sitting behind Bregman and Correa and the other infielders like that. And so I think he's a guy that could be a little bit of a late bloomer and give you something better defensively. I think he is a little bit overlooked because, look, like Chris Bryant, tremendous, you know, Matt Chapman, tremendous. But I just think J.D. Davis is a lot, he's too adequate to be constantly thrown in, you know, in these trade rumors. I think it was much more important to get stronger up the middle with a catcher and then somebody like Lindor than it was, you know, for third base and even a center fielder, like, than it was for third base. And that was my thought all along, because I think J.D. Davis's defense is more adequate than a lot of people give it credit for.
So Justin,
especially considering his bat.
So Justin, as we wrap up, what do you got coming up? We could see opening day, the lights at the end of the tunnel. Warm weather is here in New York. The snow is a little bit still. We still see some patches of ice, at least out by me on Long Island. But opening day will be in 2 weeks. Yeah. Opening day will be in 2 weeks. What do you got coming up as we head into opening day? What do you got going on at the record?
Yeah, just more preview coverage. Hopefully get to touch on all the positions. Maybe a couple of stories here and there, too much. But, yeah, just stay tuned, subscribe, all that stuff. Find me on Twitter. And, yeah, we'll keep it rolling. It feels good, my friend, to, like you said, light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I was happy to do the job last season, but this year's got a different feel. Like, it feels like we're playing a real baseball season. That's something yep. I think, you know, not really going to take for granted.
And you were a 2019 call-up on May 1st. So this is your first full season, if people want to know. Justin did not start till the end of April. So technically, you're not a Super 2. You had, you know, you got called up May 1st. They held you back for that extra year of eligibility. You know, think about that. So
I know. It's like, it's almost like COVID manipulated my service time like that. And it's, yeah, everybody, some people are like, oh, this is year 3 for you. And I'm like,
not
I
really.
Mean, God, it doesn't. It feels like year 1 point, you know, one and a third, maybe. But that, you know, like I still haven't gotten a full year. So yeah, first full season, even first time covering it from spring training through, because that was postponed last year. So it's Yeah, it should be fun. There's light at the end of the tunnel, like you said, warm weather. I mean, man, I was getting warm out there in New York this weekend, and it's better times on the horizon, my friend.
All right, Justin, have a good rest of the night. Thanks so much for joining me, and we'll catch up again. All right, my friend?
Of course, anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, be well. And that's Justin Toscano of the record at Justin C. Toscano on Twitter. Interesting stuff. He just came back to New York. I know they had him down in Port St. Lucie and like older papers they're trying to do is manage their budget. So he's sometimes covering the team remotely, just like all any of us. And I know how much challenge that creates, how challenging it is for these guys. And Justin does a great job. He interacts on Twitter. He's one of the good guys. He's one of the guys that we like to follow. We like to interact with and gives a very fair and real view of the team. All right, let's take a quick break and then wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show. All right, final thoughts. Want to thank everybody for tuning into this edition of the podcast. So what's next? Working on some... This is the time of the year where you get a lot of new books coming out. There's an interesting book coming out. I don't want to really tease it until I finalize the guest, but hoping to get into a really cool new Mets book that will... We'll preview. Always trying to get fun and new and interesting guests. We are going to do a season preview, so I'm trying to figure that out. We only have a couple of shows before spring training, and then the regular season will start. I know the first regular season weekend is Easter, so the plan would be to have our next show. And I have a feeling with this extension talk that we're going to be joining a special edition of the podcast in the middle of the week. I just got that gut. My fear is that like when this happened with Jacob deGrom, I finished the show. And the minute I finish the show, upload it, I'm driving, and here you go, DeGrom news comes out. So you basically trash the show. But I think this program could last a little bit because even if the extensions come out, we talked a little bit about it. There's some relevant conversation. But we really got into the team and how we look at the team. But you know, ultimately, this year, as we get really, as spring training now develops towards the end, the pitching is going to be such a big conversation. And you're already seeing that play out. And how you handle the bullpen, and how the staff is managed, and how they go about those back end of the rotation starters, how they handle injuries, be very interesting because it's probably going to be different than the way I like it. I like your traditional starter. I like traditional bullpen. You know, I'm okay with roles being defined by leverage, not by inning. The game has evolved. I'm fine with that. But right now, you're going to need, in some cases, especially from potentially 3, 4, and 5, similar to last year, you may need to start looking at the bullpen after the 5th inning, maybe earlier, and that can be problematic. So it's really going to be interesting how that plays out. I'm not a fan of the opener, and I hope they don't go that route, but that's another story for another day. So a lot to continue to get to. It'll be very interesting. Hopefully no more thunderbolts, no more injuries. And, you know, that first weekend of the regular season, being that it's Easter, we'll probably do the replay show midweek right before the season or that Sunday, probably that Sunday, right? I'm trying to think, well, that would be next Sunday. So I have to figure out how we're going to do it. So just stay tuned. We definitely have a show coming up next Sunday. I have a feeling we're going to have an extension show one way or the other, somewhere like a breaking news show. Then the season starts. So that first Sunday of the season, short of big news, we'll take off for Easter and then we'll be back at it. Right after. I know Passover's coming up. So, you know, for those who celebrate, happy Passover. I know Easter's coming up. So, you know, time to really get together with your families. And guess what? The grind starts very soon. And you'll be with me. I'll be here every week. And the quest begins. The story begins. And we'll see where that brings us. Every year, the best laid plans, as they say, they never, I mean, even think about the beginning of the offseason, the best laid plans of the Steve Cohen era. And Justin Toscano said it. It's not as positive as everybody makes it out to be because there's been a lot of crap that's happened. And the Mets have navigated it as well as they could, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, what comes next. All right, I want to thank Justin Toscano. Check out his work at The Record. The Record is a great publication. Also, Bob Klapisch is over there. Great stuff over at The Record. You can check out Justin on Twitter at Justin C. Toscano. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. Go to Manscaped.com. I had to get that one in there. All right. You can go on to Mike Silva Media, at Mike Silva Media on Twitter. Hammer away at me. Looking forward to it. Be well, and see you next week, everybody.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said. Done.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save